Premier League here at City have lost more to Spurs than any other team. And they're going to add another one to the list here today. And they could add another goal yet. Werner. They have. Brennan Johnson has the fourth. Oh, it gets better and better for Spurs. City were backpedalling. Brennan Johnson with a simple task to round off a day Spurs will talk about for a long, long time.
Hello and welcome to the Sound of Football podcast. I'm Graham Sibley, and as ever, I'm joined by Terry DeFellin.
Hello.
Yes, Jan's away again, but then again, it's his 50th birthday this week, so we can forgive him that, can't we, Terry?
No, he should be spending it with us.
But we have got someone in his place this week. Yes, I know we don't really have many guests at the moment. Maybe it's time we did. Maybe it's time we opened our doors again to guests. But we have opened our doors this week, and it's to one of our oldest friends in podcasting. It's Chris Nee. Chris, welcome back to The Sound of Football.
Hello. Thank you for having me again. It's such a pleasure to be back.
Well, it's always a pleasure to have you here. Well, if we've got Chris in, of course, we will have to talk about Villa. So we'll have plenty to discuss then. But as is usual, we're going to spend the opening few minutes just talking about what's happened since the last time Terry and I were behind a microphone talking to each other. And of course, last week we talked a bit about Man City and about the upcoming Premier League vote for the Associated Party Transactions Rules. No, please, listeners, stay with us here. Come on, you really want to know this. All right, essentially the Premier League won. It's going to be a lot more difficult for Man City to lie about the amount of money that they get from their sponsors. Oh, and all round, a good day for football, wasn't it, Terry?
Yeah, I mean, again, it's a little bit dry as a topic, but it's certainly a good day if you've got strong opinions about football governance and about how football should be done. But ultimately, it is about sportsmanship. There's a sporting dimension. Everyone acknowledges that Manchester City have an awful lot of money, but obviously it also has to be acknowledged that they also have to kind of earn that money. They can't just be relying on wealthy patrons. They have to be able to demonstrate that they're capable of earning money. And it's measures like this that kind of stop them from, well, frankly, circumventing the rules that they actually signed up for. That's always a thing to remember. It's one thing to be against stuff. It's one thing to be against rules. It's one thing to participate in a league and say, I think the way we do things is wrong. And then you are fine when you have a discussion and you have a stand-up row if you want to. You put motions forward, you try and change those rules. But what you don't do is you don't break them. And I think that's really where people, you know, it's only City fans who feel, oh, you know, it's all wrong, it's all unjust. Yeah, okay, fair enough. That is a view, but I think that the way to approach it is you build a case, you persuade people that your way is better, and then you change it. You don't just say, nah, sod this, I'm just going to do it anyway.
Well, City did try to lobby to get as many votes as they could to make sure that the Premier League were thwarted in their attempts to tighten up the rules on spending. But they only managed to get three clubs to come alongside them. Forest were one of them, who have already fallen foul of Premier League rules, of course, in the past year. Newcastle, obviously, because they'd love to spend lots of money, but obviously the rules preclude them from doing that. And then, of course, there was Aston Villa. Chris, Aston Villa, your club. What do they do jumping into bed with Man City for?
Well, funnily enough, Graham, they are also extremely minted. And I don't think that's a coincidence. So it's really difficult with Villa at the moment because there are measures by which the club is performing at, you know, its highest level in living memory. They're in the Champions League for the first time. Obviously, they have a history in the European Cup. And they have a manager who's massively well-respected by the fan base and seems to be doing a tremendous job, frankly. And at the same time, we have this ever-growing list of complaints and issues with ownership in the sort of bigger picture things. And that divides supporters, to be honest. And I think it comes down to, like any other club, we have supporters who are willing to twist the situation and their opinions around tribalism and getting behind the club at all costs, which with Villa I can understand to a degree because they had some very difficult times. And they've been brought back from the lower reaches of the Championship under an ownership group that's done well by them in all football measures possible. And yet, I don't really think I want my club to be on the same side of history as Manchester City and Newcastle, who are very clearly exercising their power to try and apply a stranglehold on football and change those rules, not because they think it's the best thing, but because they're willing to jam up the system in order to own success. And it's really difficult as a Villa fan to marry those two things up at the moment. I'm very much against what the vote going Manchester City's way, and I'm not that chuffed about Villa being part of it.
No, and really, we all love football, and we'd love all these things to be sorted out on the pitch. So it was very nice to see that both Forest and City got stuffed at the weekend. And almost Villa fell into that trap as well, because they were almost embarrassed against Palace, weren't they, Chris?
Yeah, I don't know if I would call it an embarrassment necessarily.
I think there's some shade being thrown at Crystal Palace there, Chris.
I'm not sure that the two are linked, because the run that precedes it as well, I don't know if it was because they decided that they were going to back City up a month ago. But yeah, form is not in Villa's favour at the moment in any competition. They've had two defeats now against Palace, and that's taken them out of one competition and been the fifth game without a win in the other, and lost in the Champions League for the first time as well, which was quite funny, but also a little bit frustrating. Thankfully, with two wins in the bank, it might not matter too much. But it's been a tough run, and going against my opinion in the court of football governance doesn't really help, but it doesn't justify the form that they're in either at the moment. It's a difficult spell. There are reasons for it, but they do need to get back to winning ways, and they couldn't have an easier fixture in the Champions League this week to get them going.
Yeah. I was just looking at the fixture and thinking, oh, well, it's not too bad. Look at the next two games. Hang on a second. No, that's not. I mean, I think you're probably looking beyond Chelsea, really, aren't you, for the recovery? But yeah. I mean, you don't know. I mean, they're a quality side, and I mean, they've got a quality coach, and it's got to snap at some point. I don't know how genuinely bad they've been as well. You will know a lot better. I mean, I did watch that first Palace game in the EFL Cup, and of course, they made lots of changes for that game. Yeah. And Palace, by contrast, are participating in the League Cup. They are fielding not the strongest squad, but not too far off it. And I think that their whole approach to that competition is such that I think you can kind of discount that.
Yes.
I mean, Tottenham, you never know with Tottenham. But yeah, I think Juventus and Chelsea are going to be two tough fixtures for Villa.
Yeah. The Villa are flawed at the moment. And that Spurs game was chaotic because it was Spurs. But also the sacrifice of the midfield was very evident. And it's a problem that is ongoing and will continue to be until they crack it and get injured players back and in the right place and consistently performing as well. They're without Onana and Kamara at the moment, which isn't going to help matters. But even with those two in the team, they play so differently to Douglas Luiz that it becomes a very difficult problem to solve. Emery's changed some things this year. The defensive line and actually the press have changed quite significantly as well. And that's going to take time. And it's going to cause things like the Spurs game. It's going to cause things like drawing to, at home against Palace or against Bournemouth. And they are still sort of figuring it out and still sort of learning, because you take Luiz out of that team, you take Jacob Ramsey out of the team, Kamara's been injured forever. It becomes a pretty tricky puzzle to solve while also trying to maintain a place A in the Champions League and B in the top four to get back into it.
The result against Tottenham looked a bit shocking when you compared to the results that Tottenham were having. Either side of it, because they lost to Palace, didn't they? And they lost to Ipswich.
Yeah.
Two sides who haven't been doing that great.
They're the only team that have lost to those two teams.
So they put in a 4-1 against Villa. And then yesterday, we all watched aghast as they beat Man City 4-0, which was just the most hilarious match of the season. Now, I mean, Ange is capable of springing some hilarious results, but that one's got to go down as perhaps the most hilarious result he's managed to pull out.
Battering City will always be hilarious, no matter who it is. They've got a really decent record against them. They don't always beat them, but they are always a thorn in City's side. it was gratifying to see that you know, Erling Haaland is capable of being wasteful on his day, and that cost them. He wasn't the only one. Their finishing was bad enough to cost them being in that game. I don't think they necessarily had four golden chances, but it might have been a little bit closer than it was. And I think Vicario had a really good game as well in goal. So it is,
yeah.
For me, from a Spurs point of view, it's more about the attacking and the vulnerability of City and how potent Spurs can be on the break. It had some echoes, I think, of the Man United game they had as well, which was equally hilarious.
Yes, obviously that game was helped out by a rather dubious red card.
Yeah.
But you couldn't see that 4-0 coming. But I did the write-up for that, for the box set. And I said at the bottom, it was going to be unpredictable. The weather was going to be awful as well. So anything could have happened. And anything did happen, didn't it?
Yeah, apparently so. Of course, some of us are watching Eintracht Frankfurt versus Werder Bremen on the other side, of course. But for those fools who were... we'd shout out to Mario Götze, who scored on his 100th appearance for Eintracht Frankfurt. Absolutely superb goal, amazing player. Yeah, I think when you've got City in the form that there is, so it is still odd. When does it, at some point, does this become a crisis? It's been so long since City have been in this state that it's almost impossible to conceive what crisis really looks like. But then, you know, within days of Pep Guardiola and City announcing that he's signed a new contract, they then cave in to Spurs. And again, Spurs are capable of this and we understand this. But I mean, it is unpredictable, although I think he would have had to have done quite well to have predicted that result. It's the old sound football adage. We don't make predictions, but we wouldn't be surprised if. And we're not surprised, are we? I mean, it's a cracking result. It's a joyful result. It's one of the great moments of football, but it's not surprising because it's City right now and because it's Tottenham right now.
And at the end of that really long run as well, for it to not be a surprise for them to lose at home for the first time in 52, 53 games is incredible. But they signposted it beforehand, didn't they? They answered the question before it was asked by parading Rodri. And he is their great miss. He is so fundamentally important to everything that they try to do that you take him out and it's just extraordinary the difference. When you watch him in the team, you don't necessarily see exactly how it's going to impact them to be taking him out. But when he's not there, they are just not very scary anymore, are they?
It's wild, isn't it? All that money that they spent, all the players they've got, amazing footballers. There's no question about it. They're all good footballers. Even the ones that aren't that good are still pretty good. Online fans complain quite a lot about Kyle Walker and think, you know, he's fast. But he's still, you'd have him in almost any team in that Premier League would want him. There are very few weak links. And yeah, even a club as rich and with the players that City have still find themselves in a position where they're reliant on one player. Although they were like some lower mid-table Premier League side. Although there were Palace, you know, in the Zaha years, who just like fell to poo just the moment he got injured.
And let's be honest, they're not going to be mid-table, are they? They're going to be fine. It will get righted to a great degree at some point very soon. Kyle Walker's an interesting point, actually. He was obviously completely outstripped at the end for the Brennan Johnson goal. But Michael Cox pointed out something that was very simple but very worth pointing out in the internet age, which is that Timo Werner had been on the pitch for about 4 minutes and is extremely quick at the best of times. And Kyle Walker had been, you know, he would have done a better part of 10 kilometres by that point. These things just happen. And Kyle Walker remains an exceptional footballer. And I mean, I'd have him in my team, no doubt about it.
What, Sphinx or Villa?
Oh, Sphinx.
Yeah, I thought so. It could get a game at White Leaf, I reckon.
Well, of course, Sphinx is your big passion now, isn't it? You are actually involved in their Coventry Sphinx of the... which division are they in, Chris?
They are in the Northern Premier League Midlands division, so fourth tier of non-league.
And how's it going up there at the moment?
It's hard work.
Yeah.
It's our second consecutive season and second ever season at this level. And we are a small club with small crowds, small budget, punching very much above our weight. And you know, promotion came with two slices of luck. First one, we got moved sideways into a division that was marginally easier than the one that we were in to get out of the right way. And we had a player called Callum Stewart in our team for the 2 seasons that we were in that division. Callum Stewart is currently the top goal scorer in the National League North and captained a Step 2 side on Saturday and is going to play in the Football League possibly within the next 18 months, I would think. And he scored 40 goals in two seasons running for us. So that helped. But we managed to stay up without him last season. It was tough. We stayed up in the end on goal difference, although it squeezed at the end rather than us chasing it. So it didn't feel as close as it looked. And then a team went out of business on the last day anyway, so it wouldn't have mattered. And we're down there again. So it's tough, really tough. We lost to the bottom team in the league at home on Saturday, conceded 3 goals in 9 minutes in Burt, which didn't help matters because you need a bit of momentum if you're trying to fight back from 2 goals down at home, don't you? And we could not build it at all. But yeah, we're above the dotted line at the moment at a level that we really have no business being at. So it's an adventure.
But I'm sure you're keeping it positive on Sphinx's social channels, aren't you?
Factual. Yeah, no opinion whatsoever. I'm so prone to getting really annoyed about other clubs and judging what they do on social media as inappropriate comments about refereeing, or you shouldn't be saying that about another team's player or blah, blah, blah. I just keep it absolutely straight down the line.
That's always the best
way. Very boring. There's lots of people around the club who would like it to be more, like if you see it as a marketing channel. It's not for us at all. It would have no effect whatsoever if we tried to be hilarious. It is there to deliver information when required and only when required.
Are you posting on Blue Sky or on X or both? What are you doing now?
We're doing both. So yep. We have a Facebook page for some reason. We have an Instagram page, which I've revived purely to share the photography of a photographer at the club whose lad is our vice captain, and he's a very good photographer, so it's nice to share those things because I like them, they're worth sharing. We have a YouTube channel. We have, I think, the best highlights package and commentator certainly in our league, probably getting up there in our level nationally, I would say. So we've got a YouTube channel that's sort of worth following for fans, and we have both X and Blue Sky. Been on Blue Sky for a pretty long time, really, with no followers until last week.
Well, yes. And over the last couple of weeks, there has been a sudden uplift in the amount of people. Because basically, yes, about a month or so ago, it was just me, you, Chris, and Ian King just sharing each other's work on there. Yeah. But yeah, over the last couple of weeks or so, it has really exploded. It reached a tipping point, didn't it? Where there was suddenly a lot of football people on there, a lot of content creators, which is really good to see. Whether or not it's going to be the long-term replacement of X, I know a lot of people, especially those with a huge following on X, have been perhaps a little reticent to leave it because it feels like they've done over a decade of work to build up a following, and I can see why they'd be worried just leaving it behind. But it does seem to be that now it's viable as a social channel. Terry, you've probably noticed this more, but there are actually clubs in Germany who have left Twitter now, haven't they? St. Pauli was one of the first, unsurprisingly, but they have been joined by others. Can you see that happening over here as well? Or do you think that's something about more about the way that German fans expect their clubs to behave on social media?
No, I'd be surprised if many English clubs took the decision to leave X for Blue Sky. I mean, certainly setting up Blue Sky channels is completely reasonable because there is a growing audience there. The difference between the number of engaged users on X by comparison to Blue Sky is still pretty wide. I mean, X is a significantly bigger channel. So most, I would think most clubs, most organizations, most companies would really have to be very careful about making that move. And I would imagine that the Premier League clubs would be the same. The Bundesliga clubs and the Bundesliga 2 clubs that have gone so far, yeah, this is really more of a, I would suggest, an understanding of, one, the sentiment within the club itself, but also I'd imagine a sort of perception of what the club's fans would expect them to do and would want them to do because of the 50+1 rule and because football clubs are governed and influenced hugely by the attitudes that come from their fan bases. So I think so far it's St. Pauli, I think Werder, Bremen, I think have gone, I think Mainz have gone, there may well be others. I think Magdeburg in the second division have gone. They might have been the first to go of the two divisions. I massively, massively might be wrong about this, but I've got a feeling that that might be the case. And St. Pauli being the first division side to go. it's interesting because it does demonstrate the two different approaches, I think, from England and Germany, from the top tier clubs to something like this, and demonstrates the difference between the two footballing nations at the top level.
Chris, you're someone who has thought lots about social media in the past and in the present as well. So were you surprised at how quickly the tipping point went a couple of weeks ago for Blue Sky to become socially viable? Or was that something you almost expected to happen?
I don't know about expected to happen. I'm not surprised by people leaving X necessarily. Individual people, like for me, for example, did it a long time ago. It was the easiest decision in the world.
Yeah.
And I'm not surprised that there are more and more people. And it's been, you guys know, as people who've been using Blue Sky for a long time, every time he does something absolutely abhorrent, we can see on the other place,
yeah,
there's a boost. And the worse those things get, and the more frequent they get, and the more significant they get, the more people are going to move over. And that's the driver for it. It's not clubs coming over to make Blue Sky happen. They are sort of recognizing that the public opinion is moving away from X, even if the public itself isn't always moving away from it. It's almost that clubs have come over by necessity. So I suppose the question mark I would have had over it is more where those people would have ended up. Now, to me, that's easy, because the alternatives people speak about in the social media industry are Threads, which to me is, you know, it might as well be X. It serves none of the purposes that people leaving algorithmic social full of rubbish are looking for. It just serves up more of the same. It was rushed out. It doesn't work. It is completely driven by the needs of Mosseri and Zuckerberg, and it doesn't do the job at all. And then Mastodon, which I don't see how anybody sees that as an alternative to anything. It's just, I'm technically have an account there, but I remember setting it up, and I know that 99 out of 100 people that I know would give up halfway through that process.
Yeah.
And then you've got Blue Sky, which has a lot of the same benefits of it, and people don't even know about them because it's so seamless to join up and just get on with things. The bigger picture benefits of Blue Sky are yet to be even evidenced, never mind applied. But it's there. It's decentralized, whether 19 million of the 20 million people there realize it or not.
Yeah.
And that's really important.
Terry points out, of course, that there are so many more users of Twitter. And I'm not sure about how that breaks down to different markets, how much the recent movement from X to Twitter is more just a Western European thing. But for most football conversations that I have online, well, probably what Terry has as well, that probably caters for probably 90% of everyone who we have following us. Is may not be in Western Europe, but they have a Western European outlook, and so probably are more influenced about whether or not they want to stay or go. But when it comes to clubs that have a global reach, or even not, even if it's just like a non-league club, which has a very local reach, but needs to have as easy a communication tool as possible, X is still going to have something there, isn't it? No matter how bonkers or hellish the open communication is on there.
Yeah, I would be hopeful that it would change if it does continue on the path it's on. But it is really tricky. It's difficult for massive clubs with massive followings, because, you know, anything they do is probably going to be followed by their supporters anyway. They could probably move over to Blue Sky, no problem. And it would be a benefit to Blue Sky to have 30 million Man United supporters just jump over because they had to. But in doing that, they are making a big statement.
Yeah.
And those statements are the kind of statements that football clubs do not want to make. And that's the, you know, it's the problem and the symptom, isn't it, of what's going on, is that leaving X is a political act in a way that it really shouldn't be. It should come down to the hard numbers. But actually, they know that they are saying to half of their fan base, that we fundamentally, absolutely disagree with what's going on over there, which a lot of you might be totally comfortable with. It might be exactly where you want to be. It might chime with your views completely. And they're just not willing to do that. It's a slightly different problem at our sort of level. Sphinx have got 6,000 odd, about the same size as my sort of personal one was when I canned it. And most of those people are totally irrelevant. And I would say that to their faces. They don't come to games. They certainly don't get entertained by the channel. It's there because we have people who need to know what's going on when games are called off, new signings, things, you know, club news stuff, boring stuff. And that group of people either doesn't realize what's going on with X at all, or they don't care and think, okay, that's where I get my football stuff. Not bothered. Not political. I don't do politics, that type of person. Or, and you know, let's be honest, I don't know who they might be, but there are probably people within the club who are totally comfortable with what X is doing at the moment. Moving away as a club that isn't St. Pauli. We're not an activist club in any way, shape or form. We all have beliefs and values that we want the club to uphold, but we are not an outwardly, explicitly left-wing football club. And that's not my decision to make. There is definitely a point in the future at which it becomes too much and I start having the conversation with them about moving away. Personally, we're well past that point. Rationally, I'm not sure it's the right thing for the club at the moment to make that statement and lose communication channel with potentially 50% of the people who come through the gate.
So, do you think that maybe the well has been poisoned for Blue Sky because people are just going to be turned away from Twitter and will look at Blue Sky and think, well, yeah, it'll just be like Twitter eventually? Or do you think there has been an evolution there where people are going to be looking at maybe WhatsApp channels instead? Closed networks. Open but closed networks. So if you've got clubs with their own WhatsApp channel, they're going to be looking more at communicating that way rather than looking at something like Blue Sky.
I think it was specifically with clubs. Again, it goes back to what Chris was saying about what Blue Sky can offer, particularly in terms of its sort of like federated networks, which I don't fully pretend to understand. I know Chris works in social media and knows it better. Graham, you're a techie and you probably understand it better than I do. But I think that actually it's possible Blue Sky might be able to offer those kind of services, an open, closed network, so to speak, or a federation. But it might well be that they just don't know or understand enough about it to be able to make that leap. And I'm not altogether certain that Blue Sky are doing enough to make that aware. But they're growing so quickly, and probably an awful lot of the time they're spending right now is just making certain that the service stays online while they just go through this extraordinary growth, that we're not seeing those benefits. But yeah, certainly, I mean, I follow the official Crystal Palace WhatsApp channel, and an awful lot of other Palace fans do as well. I would imagine there's already loads of unofficial WhatsApp channels, WhatsApp groups, Discord servers, and I'm certain that all of that is up for grabs. The opportunity for Blue Sky is for them to have a real big land grab and grab an awful lot of that Twitter usage and make it theirs, because it just makes the most sense, because, you know, beyond anything else, the interface is almost exactly the same. But it's just because it's non-algorithmic, it's you're less likely to be served up content based on the whims of the company's owners or owner. But at the same time, that and the opportunity exists. You know, I'm sure, you know, WhatsApp were looking at it, Telegram, I don't know, maybe not. Discord certainly looking at these opportunities to sort of say, well, every time that man does something awful, there's another whole stack of users that we can grab and make ours. Well, the clubs see about it, I don't know. I think there will be a tipping point. And I feel it will probably, rather than being a politically driven decision, it will be on the grounds of taste and decency in this country rather than politics, which might be the reason that in other countries.
Chris?
Yeah, I think usability as well. And that's one of the big things for me. And I left on moral grounds, but also it's unusable. Yeah, it's really interesting. So in the grand scheme of things, almost all social media, in inverted commas, communication happens away from the public eye, in WhatsApp, in Instagram, DMs, things like that. So clubs should be already considering that. Most of them have broadcast channels now, but a lot of them could be doing other things. So that's definitely a big sort of consideration. In terms of whether Blue Sky can offer that, Blue Sky is the Twitter version, but the Blue Sky, the company, is developing the protocol on which Blue Sky, the social platform, is built. And that protocol can be used, or will be able to be used, to build any of these things. The competing sort of Fediverse technology is ActivityPub, which is what Mastodon sits on and what Threads, I think, now plugs into as well. There are already on there the Instagram of ActivityPub and the Reddit of ActivityPub and the Twitter, and there's loads and loads of ways to do sort of alternative decentralized versions of the social media experiences that people are used to. And there's no reason whatsoever that messaging shouldn't be part of that. I mean, there are Web3 messaging services out there already that are built on these technologies, and the ease of signing up and using them is sort of the key and the curse, I think, for Blue Sky, because Blue Sky has connected because people don't have to think about AT Proto, and they don't have to think about how it compares to ActivityPub and, you know, why they've got dot Blue Sky dot social at the end of their names, and why they can't have that taken away, and why it's significant that I've got my domain name as, you know, all of that doesn't matter to people just signing up for a social media channel. And the masterstroke of Blue Sky has been to remove all of that while also working on the technology in the background, making sure that the bright future of the AT Proto Fediverse, for want of a better word, comes to kind of full, rich, creative fruition and becomes somewhere where football can thrive. That's a real challenge, because as soon as you start talking about the stuff people don't care about, as listeners are discovering right now, it becomes very, very tricky to get them to buy into something.
And the thing is, I don't think people really appreciate how much of a foothold WhatsApp has at the moment. Not just in football, but in the world in general.
Colossal.
It's colossal. And it has a worrying hold as well. If people want to talk about scary social media channels, you want to talk about the one that basically government is held together by. People who work in government using their own personal phones as a work communication tool. That is slightly worrying. If you really wanted to piss off your local authority, ask for all the WhatsApp messages by their council employees and see what happens.
I will say from experience, although the WhatsApp itself didn't exist at this point, but if you do want to really get some fun out of that process, I would suggest that a freedom of information request towards the Home Office might be enjoyable.
Oh, my word. Well, it wouldn't surprise me if they're getting loads of those. But I look at my own experience with non-league. On my phone, I am a member of 3 group chats about Whiteleaf. I'm on the general fan one. I'm on one for volunteers. I'm a bit of a fraud on there. All I do is provide them with the website. I don't do any content work for them. And there's one that Terry's on as well, and Jan's on as well, over the guys who just go down and arrange the time that we're meeting up in the bar. So that shows you the different levels up just on my phone. But players are going to be in their own groups, aren't they? They're going to be with other players from other clubs. I would imagine that there's so much more movement around of players, because that level of communication between them that was perhaps only just a few years ago, only there as a nodding acquaintance or I know a mate or know a mate who will give you a ring. But now all of these opportunities keep coming up on phones. Have you any sort of feeling for that, Chris, that the communications, the ease of communications between people at all levels of football now is changing football behind the scenes?
Yeah, I would say it's entirely the infrastructure behind how our club works.
Yeah.
You know, we have, ones I'm in would be the sort of with the board, obviously have various chats of their own as well. I'm in a staff chat with management and the board and volunteers of significant seniority. And the players have one. We have various supporters ones for, you know, particularly little groups, people who aren't on Twitter, you know, people who just the easiest way to update people on very informally little groups of supporters. There is obviously a squad one as well with the managers in. I have no doubt there's one without the managers in. And yeah, the sort of cross-pollination between clubs is absolutely manifest. And I would say the sort of level of friendship between players of clubs all over the West Midlands is striking. And I've never thought really about how those people know each other, and WhatsApp is probably a big part of that picture.
Yeah.
It's amazing. Like, they just, when you follow your own players on Twitter and you happen to scroll through the feed and you see them talking to all sorts of players from all sorts of places who they've never played with, but they seem to be really pally with. Very strange. No rivalry these days. It's terrible.
Well, it's a good thing though, isn't it, Terry?
On the pitch, yeah, absolutely. I think camaraderie and solidarity between workers is a good thing. And so that applies to football as it does to anything else in life. So, yeah, absolutely. I think it is a good thing. I think you can leave the rivalries to the fans, I think, and the clubs to develop, and leave the players to just give their best.
And of course, if you are in a fans open WhatsApp group, you'll soon realise that fans are not always in unison, are they?
No, they're not. Absolutely. And that's to be expected. And it's interesting as well, because, I mean, I was talking earlier about Germany and about how a particular sort of like ethos is put forward and clubs respond to that. But I guarantee you that there will be many dissenting voices about that. It's just that at the moment with a number of clubs, the sort of progressive voice tends to be more prevalent. But if you're looking at the way German politics is developing right now, that may well change over the years, or even sooner than that. Those kind of WhatsApp groups, if you're open to experiencing different points of view, then they're a really, really interesting place to go and spend time. But if you've had enough with other people's points of view and you just want to hide in your own bubble, then, they're probably best avoided.
I've no personal experience of this, but the world of parents and schools WhatsApp groups apparently are just an absolute war zone.
Oh, we'll have to ask Jan about that when he comes back. The thing is about WhatsApp groups is that they've replaced forums. And forums, obviously, which is something that we all cut our teeth in before creating our own content. But it's sad that forums no longer exist, but especially for non-league, because forums could easily be trolled by opposition fans. But sad that football forums are no longer really a thing.
Very much so. Technologically, they were of their day, weren't they? But the way they worked was sort of really interesting and really valuable from a sociological point of view. I did one of my exams about football forums. I did a sociology degree. Spent 3 hours writing on a previously blank pile of paper about the difference in ties that you get between different groups of supporters within a football forum. And those aren't really there to the same degree. But then, of course, the next thing that came along was football blogging, which all of us have enjoyed to a varying degrees or not enjoyed over the years. And yeah, I mean, we still have ways to communicate with each other. We will find our way eventually. I came off X ages ago and everybody's coming to join me where I am now, which is lovely. But being able to do all of those things all in one place, and actually my writing career probably started on VillaTalk as well, in fairness. It's a shame, but they would be weird now, I think.
Yes, they would. But you are currently writing on Substack, aren't you, at the moment? So why don't you tell us a bit about high-protein beef paste?
High-protein beef paste, yes. High-protein beef paste is my Substack page. It's very general football. It's very just whatever I want to write about. There is a free issue that goes out every Tuesday, issue 100 of which will go out on the same day, I think, as this podcast. And then there's a bunch of other stuff as well. Various features I've attempted to make valuable for paying subscribers, which I think will stop fairly soon. But yeah, if you want to read 2,000 words of a middle-aged bloke ranting on about stuff that he thinks is important in football, then please do. It's hpbp.substack.com.
And of course, while you're on Substack, you can subscribe to the Weekend Box Set as well, which will, this weekend, have a preview of Chelsea versus Villa. Chris, how do you think that one's going to go down?
I think that the firepower that Chelsea have will prove very tricky for a slightly defensively error-prone Villa.
That's beautifully put.
Very beautiful.
I think Cole Palmer is going to tear Villa a new arsehole.
In its own way, that's also as beautifully put.
Have you not got anyone just to kick lumps out of him, like they tried to do at the weekend?
Diego Carlos, probably, but not sure I'd rely on him to do that, even.
They had to catch him first, I suppose, isn't it?
But even kicking lumps out of Cole Palmer wasn't enough to save Steve Cooper from the sack, though, was it? Any predictions as to who's going to get that job?
Potter?
Feels like Brian Potter, doesn't it?
Leicester colleague of mine says that they've been after him repeatedly and he's always knocked them back. I think his circumstances sufficiently diminished to be able to now accept the call if it comes in.
Well, Terry, you're going to be writing about Der Klassiker on Saturday night. Borussia Dortmund, 100% record at home, only 1 point away. But at least it's a home game for Dortmund against Bayern. How's that going to go down?
Yeah, that is a very difficult one to predict because they are two totally different sides at the moment at home. I mean, Dortmund are obviously going to go after Bayern, and Bayern, the combination of Min-jae Kim and Deo Upamecano can be a little bit fragile, but it is worth bearing in mind that they're top of the league now by, I think, 5 or 8 points. And although they have their foibles, Bayern, they're still slightly work in progress. They are coming together quite nicely. And Harry Kane is just simply irrepressible at the moment. And Bayern just seem to know what to do with that guy to get him to score lots and lots of goals. So I feel that we're in for a game of football. And yeah, of course, it's not out of the question. But if you were betting, you probably would still bet on the league leaders to prevail in that game.
Oh, yes, you would. And we have got a real mixed bag of football as well this weekend, because we've got the Copa Libertadores final. That's on BBC Three on Saturday night. We've also got FA Cup action as well, squeezed in around those games. And of course, Liverpool versus Man City, which is the big game on Sunday. Chris, thanks a lot for coming along. It's been great to have you here. And please do come back for the Christmas show, won't you?
It would be a pleasure.
And as I said, if you get along to Substack and subscribe to Chris's newsletter there, and you can also subscribe to the Weekend Box It, a link for which is on our website at sofpodcast.com. And I'll put a link to Chris's Substack in the show notes as well. But that is all we have time for this week. So from me, Graham Sibley, from Terry DeFellin, and from our guest, Chris Nee, it's goodbye.
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 Get in touch with us on Blue Sky or Instagram, where we are at Sound of Football, or go to sofpodcast.com. Like us, share us, rate us and review us. Do it now!
Love it.
Thanks, fellas.
Man, we covered a lot of ground. And I do like how in-depth you got on the workings of Blue Sky. I think it's just what we needed. And no one else is going to have that.
That is fresh content. Okay, niche, yes, but it's good. It's nice to have technical discussions from
time
to
time. Yes, it is. Very good. Nice. Yes. Yeah. And we never back away from niche, do we, Terry?
No. We never, even though from time to time we really should.
I'm trying to think what the Sport Bible headline would have to be for this. That's hard work, that is.